A microbiologist, an attorney, and a winemaker walk into a wine bar, and the person behind the counter says, "Well, hello, Elaine Sale. How can I help you?" Tonight on SIP episode 123, we discuss with this multi-talented woman how she transitioned from one career into the winemaking in Sonoma County, and the audience gets to select the next clone from this vineyard that goes into her wine. Join us tonight. SIP episode 123 begins now. I am so excited for this episode because this is one I've been waiting for since I saw it on the schedule a month or so ago. My name, ladies and gentlemen, is Martin Cody, co-founder of Cellar Angels. This is actually SIP episode 123. Now, the new folks, Edward, that would be you. Derek, that's you. Dahlia, you are not new. But some of the new folks, hi, Ivy, might be wondering what is Cellar Angels? Cellar Angels is a direct-to-consumer wine company that was founded in 2010, 13 years ago, with the sole mission of bringing to wine lovers around the country some of the best limited production wine producers coming out of Napa and Sonoma right now. These are not wines you're going to find at your wine store. You're rarely, if ever, going to see them on a restaurant wine list. And really, the reason is because many of these producers just don't make enough wine to have distribution. So I am drinking this evening, as are many of you, the 2018 Elaine Pinot Noir, and we're going to get deep into the discussion of this wine in a few minutes. But before we do, I wanted to share with you a little bit about what we're going to be talking about. You this evening are going to have an opportunity to select a clone that will eventually make its way into a vine that will then also be into a wine that we will hopefully drink sometime in the not too distant future from this particular vineyard, which is right behind me. Now, for those of you wondering, how are these people drinking wines and why am I not drinking this wine? It's because they went to the Cellar Angels website. And Paul V, I just was made aware of a challenge with your SIP kit. So I apologize on behalf of the company for that. Oh, Peter G, not Paul V. Peter G. Is Pete on? Maybe we don't have to apologize. Kidding, Peter. Chicago guy, too. So people go to the Cellar Angels website and they see the first thing on the online wine marketplace is the SIP kit. If you were to buy this today, you are set for March 24th, my birthday, through April 28th. So you will have four wines, and every single Friday you can drink with us, the vigneron or the winemaker, and learn in great detail. It's kind of an intimate trip to the valley where you're drinking the wine that the person that you're talking with has produced. It really is the next best thing to being there, quite honestly. So this is the SIP kit. Grab one of those. Tonight we're going to be drinking and talking about this wine. And I said this earlier, Elaine, and I'll say it again, could be the best $50 Pinot Noir I've tasted in 10 years. It is unbelievable. And I'm looking forward to describing and learning from you about this wine. But there's only 25 left in stock. So for anybody that wants to grab an angel bonus offer, which is a case of wine, and you will receive an intimate tasting with Elaine. We'll talk more about that. At this property behind me, I would grab it quick because those likely won't last. Of course, we do aromas, palate, flavor, pairings. We're going to do all that and more with the producer this evening. So we are very, very excited because if it's Friday, SIP happens. So that was a lovely gift. And by the way, we drink very, very serious wines at Cellar Angels. This evening's wine being an example of that. We just don't take ourselves too seriously. Wine is meant to be enjoyed. It brings people together. It helps us have conversations, taste great food, and enjoy each other's company, which is what Cellar Angels is all about. We often say Cellar Angels isn't a company, it's a feeling, because our customers are angels and they're doing amazing things by helping these small producers move wine, create jobs, and we use the proceeds of those to help some charities around the country every single year. So it just is a nice mission to be on to help change the world. Oh, and there's wine. So speaking of wine, I want to introduce tonight's guest because it's a fascinating story and one that starts, has some North Carolina roots, has some Washington DC roots, and thankfully now is in Sonoma County's famous wine production region. And ladies and gentlemen, without much further ado, please welcome Elaine Sale to the program.
Hello, everyone. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers. For joining. My pleasure. So right before we jump in, I want to share last week's quiz question, because I know Doug is interested to see if Brent is on. So 1940s, and Elaine, see if you know this. Dr. Harold Omo of UC Davis began to import Pinot Noir vines from France, Germany, and Switzerland. Omo's oldest documented Pinot Noir import in 1951 was which cutting? I know it's probably tougher for you to pull this one off the top of your head because you don't have the multiple choice. But the answer was the Pommard clone from Burgundy, and Brent H. is actually on. So Brent, you are the winner, and dare I say, again. Now, for those of you that are wondering if Martin and Brent are related, we are not. I don't know how he wins every single time. My guess is he's got some sort of an alert to the Cellar Angels email and his Gmail account. So the minute he comes out, he reads the quiz question, but he has been first more than 10 times. So Brent, congratulations on that. Doug R., sorry. And Doug R. is actually in the studio at Elaine's house this evening. So the Cellar Angels is just feeling free to just get in-person tastings during SIP broadcasts. I love it. All right, Elaine, let's begin. When I was reading a lot of your bio over the past couple of weeks, and I read one part of wine country for you really began in college. Tell me a little bit about, you know, where or how you first became not indoctrinated, but where you thought, wow, this is actually a pretty interesting beverage. I might want to learn more about it.
I went to San Jose State, and one of my favorite things to do while I was there, it didn't happen that often, but I loved coming up to wine country, both Napa and Sonoma. As undergraduate, I was studying microbiology, and everything about winemaking just seemed so interesting to me. But I actually kind of had the idea when I was 18 years old, and this was a long time ago, you could actually drink when you were 18, back then before the drinking age went up. And I thought I would love to cure cancer. So anyway, I didn't go into winemaking. Hadn't heard about resveratrol. But anyway, I stayed in science for a very long time, but I was just thrilled with wine country. I loved it. I loved tasting wine, and I have continued to taste it throughout my life ever since then.
Yeah. So you were going to San Jose State for microbiology, and tell me a little bit about the degree you got in microbiology.
Well, it was a combination of microbiology and molecular biology. I really loved genetics, decided that I would love to do genetic engineering. And so then I went on to graduate school and studied microbiology and molecular biology, mostly molecular biology, and was in that field for a very long time. I was in Boston studying.
We're in Boston. And by the way, up until that double major, we were like two peas in a pod because I drank wine in college too. So the similarities are remarkable. And I'm curious about Boston because I literally just got back from Boston yesterday. So where were you in school in Boston?
I was in graduate school at Tufts. Okay. And I was at the downtown campus in Boston in Chinatown. I lived in Kenmore Square, right around the corner from Fenway Park.
Ah, such a great city. Such a great city.
It was fun.
So then you decided to, science wasn't everything you wanted it to be, and you wanted to get into law?
Well, first I decided after I got my PhD that I needed to go skiing. So I was a ski bum for 2 winters in Utah. That was really fun too. But then I needed to get serious again. So I moved to Washington, D.C. And for 4 years, I was a postdoc at Georgetown University. in the Department of Pharmacology, which is where I met my husband. He was on the faculty in a different department.
just a couple of underachievers. So where, I understand, I can appreciate the San Jose State and the proximity to great wine country. And now you're out east, you're in DC. Kind of fast forward me to saying, okay, I'm now I have a law career, I've got the science background, but I still have this want pulling at me that is wine related.
So it took a while. I was working as a patent attorney for a long time. But as our children, who were both born in Washington, D.C., were getting older, we decided that we would probably move to California after they were both ready to go off to school. So I started taking classes at UC Davis. Well, not at UC Davis. It was an online certification program. It was five college classes, one in viticulture and the others in winemaking. And I enjoyed doing that in the evenings I was working. And we started looking for a vineyard because my husband Mark said, wouldn't you like to move to a vineyard after this? So we did. I found this beautiful vineyard that you can see in the background in Sonoma County. I have 2 acres of Pinot Noir, 1 acre of Chardonnay. And at first, I was not planning to make wine because I just didn't know how to get started or exactly what to do. I had the UC Davis certificate, but there are a lot of obstacles, like where are you going to make wine, or did I want to start, you know, working at someone else's winery? So someone took me under their wing and helped me make wine from our vineyard.
Now, did you have any type of wine epiphany throughout your professional career that you then lean towards a certain style or a certain varietal or a certain region because of this? You got bit hard by, maybe, you know, people making great Pinots, there's usually a Burgundy experience of some sort. Or I'm curious, was there something for you where you thought, wow, this has stopped me in my tracks and I want to make something like this?
Well, at first I really loved bigger wines than Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. It was more of a cab drinker. But perhaps it was the movie Sideways. Shame to admit, but I started drinking more and more Pinot Noir and just loving it. It goes better with a lot of foods and it's easier just to drink by itself. I really loved the California wines. The person who helped me make my first vintage had formerly been at Costa Brown, which I thought was an amazing, I had some of their amazing wines and thought that mm-hmm. was the style I wanted to go in. But I've actually now tuned it back a little bit and not making quite as fruit forward wines as I originally did.
Well, and it's funny too, because you have the science background obviously nailed. And we talk often and have for years about how wine is the blend of science and art. And my guess is you draw on your science background all the time.
I do. It made studying at UC Davis much easier than probably it was for a lot of people who didn't have the chemistry and the microbiology background. I understood yeast and fermentation and could do all the winemaking calculations that I needed to do. So it was extremely helpful. I've always loved to cook and bake. And so this kind of just became something that I had dreamed of doing, but Never saw how I was going to get there until we just moved out here and I jumped in and did it.
And a question from the chat already from Edward. Do you happen to know Kareth Overstreet, winemaker of Brilliant Wines in Sonoma?
I do not.
Because the very similar medical and research background. So there's just a question. And then Ivy wants to address the wagging tail and the reflection behind you. So I'm certain at some point in time, that's going to have to make a cameo. One of the two, I believe.
Blue.
All this fine.
This is my standard poodle, Blue. And he has one blue eye, which I'm not sure he's going to show you right now. But he's one of the vineyard dogs. He patrols the vineyard and helps keep out the coyotes, which are problematic not only for my chickens, but they like to bite the irrigation lines and have a little drink.
Nothing like adding to the operational expense of running a vineyard when, yeah, that's great. Love it. All right, so then you found the property what year?
We found it in 2013 from North Carolina.
From North Carolina.
So we found a realtor who specialized in vineyard properties that lived out here. And when he saw something he thought I would like, he would send me some photos of the property and would talk about it. And I'd decide whether to fly out and see it. I pretty much decided by the time we were looking for properties that I was interested in Sonoma County for a few reasons. One was that the weather's a little cooler. I like that. I preferred Pinot to Cab or some of the, you know, heavier wines that are around here. Sure. And Sonoma County is the most welcoming place for both growing wines and for making growing grapes and for making wines. So many people are ready to give their advice. There doesn't seem to be all that much competition among winemakers, and it was a very welcoming community for a beginner to come in and start doing her stuff.
It's such a heartwarming area of the country, and I even think heartwarming industry, because we hear stories that you just articulated so often, and I don't hear them in other industries. I mean, the authenticity of wine people helping wine people is as genuine as it gets. And it really is something to behold. And it's a kinship that I wish would spread throughout other industries, because I love when you can be at a winery at 3:30 or 4 o'clock tasting and then ask someone there, hey, we've got an hour and a half left before we have to go back and get dinner reservations going. Where else should we taste? And they will legitimately tell you where to taste. And oh, go see Susan up the road. She's doing some incredible stuff with Viognier that's off the, you know, they will instantly tell you. And they recognize that a rising tide, you know, raises all the ships. And they aren't just going to say, no, I'm not going to tell you anything, like you would find in other industries. Most industries are pretty guarded with where they're going to share information. And I love that about what the wine industry always have. So it doesn't surprise me, it delights me, in fact, that someone took you under their wing and has basically pseudo adopted you with regards to, here, let's make wine, let's help you pursue your dream. And it's just magical. Do you want to share who that person was?
Yes, David Hale. He's the winemaker and owner of Domaine Della.
Okay.
He makes wonderful Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And so he is friends with my neighbor, and my neighbor Russell introduced me to David, and he just kind of fell in love with the vineyard and knew, some of the wineries that had been buying the grapes and said, Elaine, I want to help you make wine. And so, I started making wine with him.
Oh, that's awesome.
The 2018 was made with David Hale and bottled with John Phillips, who was on the show recently.
Yep. Those of you know John Phillips of Inspiration. So we've known John for going on probably 11 to 12 years now. And that's fantastic. I love that story. I do want to remind people that we are actually, this topic this evening is single variety field blends of different clones. And so we're talking Pinot Noir. And Elaine, I actually might be a little bit following in your footsteps, because for 25, 30 years, I have been a Cab dominant lover. But over the last 2 or 3 years, and this is all Sonoma influenced, I've been getting more and more into Pinot Noirs. And actually not the candied, sometimes overly fruity Pinot Noirs, but more of the earthy style, aromatic Pinot Noirs that just have, that powerful might be a description and stuff like that. But I am growing more towards the love of Pinot Noir. But what I didn't know, and this will be this first poll question, is how many different Pinot Noir clones have actually been documented. So Sipsters, how many different Pinot Noir clones have been documented? And we're going to talk about a couple of them that are in the vineyard behind Elaine and myself this evening. And then you are going to select a clone, because, and I'll let Elaine tell the story about how some of these vines have to be replaced. So, and by the way, anybody picks up a smartphone to start doing this research before answering, that is not the type of authenticity we are talking about. This is the honor system. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wow, a smattering of everything. So the audience has correctly assumed that there are more than 10 Pinot Noir clones that have been documented. The fact of the matter is, for those of you that said 31 to 40, you're correct, because there's been over 40 documented Pinot Noir clones, which I find amazing. Although I guess probably not too amazing when there's over 1,000 different varieties in Italy alone. I'm sure there's some Pinot Noir in there. But impressive, pretty good answer so far. There will be one more poll question that everyone gets to participate in later on. So talk to us about the vineyard behind us, that when you purchased it, the vines were there, and the clones that they are.
The vineyard was planted in 1998. We bought it in 2013. I have 2 acres of Pinot Noir and 1 acre of Chardonnay. There are 2 Pinot Noir clones. They're both Dijon clones. One is Dijon 115, and that's a bit behind us, but a little over in that direction. You're mostly looking at Chardonnay right now. And I also have 667 out front. So those clones are approximately 50-50 mix in the 2018 for those who are drinking it.
Okay.
I made the 2018, I had 1 ton of 115 and 1 ton of 116 that I vinified, and some other grapes went to other wineries. So my very first year, I only vinified a ton of clone 115 Pinot Noir. And Doug has had the opportunity to compare the 115 only 2007 vintage to the mix of the 2 clones in the 2018. And they're all very different. Wouldn't you?
They're all excellent. So that's all it's good.
Well, and I think it's fascinating. You only produced 112 cases of the 2018. So act fast, kids, because as we talk about, great wine is rarely mass produced. And this is another perfect example. And I'm excited to see what holds for the coming vintages. But you mentioned that the vines were planted in 1998 and some of them are dying off and you have to replace them.
Yes. So I am trying to decide and hope to get your thoughts on what clone might contribute to this blend of 115 and 667 that I have. And it would be approximately about, I think, 8% of what will join what I already have. So it will be a less dominant percentage, I guess, a lower percentage of a three clone mix that I would put into my future Pinot Noirs. And
well, oh, go ahead.
So I would just add that clones have different characteristics in flavor profiles, in growth profiles, and in fruit size. And so I have been thinking about a number of clones. There are so many to think of. But so on this chart, the 115 and the 667 are the clones that went into the 2018 Pinot Noir that you may have in your glass, I hope. Yep. And so that's what most of my vineyard and will be in most of the wine that I continue to produce. But I can tweak that wine and add a little complexity to it by choosing a clone with a different profile. So I've listed five other possibilities, and these are all clones that are commonly grown in California. There are many others too, but they're fairly well known and liked among California winemakers.
So I think it's great too, because for those of you that actually have the 2018 in your glass, you now have an inclination of what that tastes like. And if you wanted to add potentially a bit of more elegance to it, maybe you pick the Swan clone that has bright fruit, raspberry, strawberry, cranberry, you know, some briar patch in it. Or if you want something that has a little bit more velvety texture, Pommard, you know, rich, velvety, intense fruit, strawberry, cola, tons of aromatics on the Pommard clone. And it's got a great lineage too, identified in 1940 UC Davis. You can pick any one of these. This gives you, I mean, it's kind of like the spice rack analogy that we talk about often in wine. So Elaine has a 50-50 base right now. It's going to be variation of that with one of these clones that Angels are going to select that will make up the potential 6 to 8% of the new vintage once you start planting them. And then how many of these, I mean, walk us through kind of that planting process. Are you budding something over, or are you completely planting brand new?
It's mostly grafting onto existing rootstock. There are a few vines that I need to completely replace, but most of it will just be picking the clone and grafting it onto an American rootstock that's resistant to phylloxera.
Good. We definitely want it resistant to phylloxera. That is for certain. And Angels and Sipsters, for those of you that would like to turn your cameras on, Mission Control will be taking care of that in a minute or two. I do want to actually, before or as we turn cameras on, we'll do aromas, flavors, and pairings on this wine, Elaine. So this is where you get to kind of put your nose in the glass and describe what you're getting. And then obviously any can't miss pairings that you've had with this or have had with others that knocked your socks off.
So I think the fruit is pretty intense. I'm getting more dark fruits. Dark cherry, some plum, spice on the palate. I would give it a medium body. A medium length finish. It's aging, it's becoming a little less fruit forward and a little more meaty, spicy. So it changes almost every time I open a bottle. It's an evolving.
What would you pair with this? And Lori, I saw the jug comment, so don't think I didn't see that.
So it goes well with a lot of food. I really like it with duck. Mm. If you happen to be able to get Liberty Farms duck, that is a small duck farm in Sonoma County, but you can actually have the duck shipped to you, and it's amazing. Just richness without being overly fatty. It's the best duck I've ever had.
Wow.
And I like the duck breast. I like to pan sear it with a spice coating, maybe like a five spice mix, Chinese five spice, a little bit of brown sugar, some cumin, some fennel, and then I like to take it off of the pan, pour off the duck fat, toss them with potatoes, stick them in the oven, and then finish off the duck while it rests. I deglaze the pan with Pinot Noir. Add a pat of butter and maybe throw in a few blackberries at the end.
I think the pat of butter is a nice touch.
Blackberry from the swine.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. I can't wait to have that at your house.
It's great with salmon. You can even have it with lamb.
Okay, I believe that.
As well with cheese. We're having Latour. Triple creme cheese.
Is Doug doing dishes? What's a Doug doing back there?
What you hear is the ice bucket. We have Chardonnay open too.
All good.
Rest is Chardonnay glass.
Marilyn and Sean looking good in Los Cabos from Mexico to China. And we've got sipsters have chimed in from all over the world. Jeff, one time from India. Doug, you know the story about Doug, has been in London, Egypt. I mean, it's unbelievable. You guys are so loyal. We don't deserve it, but we're going to take it. That meal sounds amazing. Just incredible. And it's so, I don't eat a lot of duck, quite honestly. Pate, yeah. Foie gras, yeah. Love it. But we don't have a lot of duck.
Roast chicken. It's great with roast chicken.
Perfect. Is there a certain Pinot that you would use to deglaze the pan?
The one that I have open.
Okay, that works.
I do have quite a lot of my Pinot Noirs in my wine cellar, and so that's what I often pull out. But yeah.
All right, for those of you that are saying, well, hang on, I don't remember the clones, I'll put those back up for you to pick. So if you want to jot down something, Mount Eden, deep, intense fruit, but has some pepper on it. It's a heritage clone, Pommard clone, suitcase clone. Elaine, can you talk to us about the difference between Pommard, heritage, and suitcase?
Sure. So after phylloxera devastated a lot of the vineyards, people were grafting French clones onto American rootstock. And I think with maybe just some messy techniques, there were a lot of issues with that in vineyard health. And so people became interested in finding new clones that were healthier. One of the things that UC Davis did with Dr. Olmo was have him go to France and Switzerland and Germany and look for healthy vines that were producing great wines. And he was bringing new budwood back to UC Davis, propagating it, and then seeing how it did both from health and vigor standpoint, as well as for, was it making great wine? So that's where the Parmar clone came from. Mm-hmm. It was actually from Domaine, or I forget whether it's a Chateau Pomard or Domaine Pomard region of France. Yes, yes, but there's, I think there's also a Domaine Pomard. But anyway, he got the budwood from many different places, and this was one of the ones he propagated. And then there had already been, so that's the Pomard clone and many, many other clones too that aren't on this table. The heritage clones were vines that came from probably before Prohibition that were grown in California. So they had a California heritage. They were all brought from Europe, but they had been brought a long time ago. So, Yeah. And so people started taking cuttings from vines that were already growing well in California to establish their vineyards. In 1948, the US government decided that too many people were bringing clones that carried diseases into the United States. And so they made a prohibition about bringing it in without going through a special regimen of turning it over to a department that would look either a university or an agriculture department that would verify that it was free of disease before they allowed it to be used in a vineyard. So
that seems like a prudent thing to do.
And then, but because there were so many people who really wanted to grow Pinot Noir and didn't want to deal with the compliance issues, they would go to France and get cuttings either in a friendly way, given cuttings, or even there are some stories, I don't know if they're actually true, of people like sneaking into prestigious Grand Cru, Premier Cru vineyards at night, taking a little cutting and bringing it back to the US. And they would generally wrap a cutting in wet newspaper or something to keep it moist, stick it in their suitcase, and not declare it in customs. So
I'm 100% positive that's happened.
Bootlegging vine cuttings and bringing them into the US in their suitcase. Those are called suitcase clones. And so some of the ones on the list are thought to be a suitcase clone, but it's a little harder to know that much about the history, because since it was illegal, some people used to say that maybe it was, now say that it wasn't a suitcase clone and they actually came from somewhere else. So the history of the suitcase clones is much less known.
I like it. It's part of the mystery that is wine.
Yes, whereas the heritage clones and the UC Davis clones and the Dijon clones that I have were all very well documented, you know, brought here by universities or, you know, brought first by, you know, Inglenook Vineyard or just different places who did keep a record and had healthy clones growing here before Prohibition.
All right, should we let these Pinot Noir drinkers vote on what clone they would like you to use?
Please.
And those of you from Illinois, don't forget, vote early, vote often. Here we go. Boom, boom, boom. Got it.
I don't know if it would be helpful to show the chart again. Well, you're doing this, sir.
I unfortunately can't share two things at once.
Yes.
Maybe I could.
So I would say that the Swan clone is a much more delicate, elegant Pinot Noir. The Pommard has, and the Calera have a lot of spicy characteristics.
Hold on, we're having some technical difficulties. I will have to go up to the antenna and hold the tin foil to get a better signal for this poll question, for those of you that remember that problem. Now let's try that again. Hang on, what do you want me to share?
Do that poll again.
I don't think I ever stopped the poll.
I did.
Oh, but you shouldn't have.
The poll is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I had to turn it on.
But now it's asking me to share the results. Oh, hang on, relaunch poll. Okay, we're going to start this poll over. This is, after all, SIP episode 123. You'd think we'd have some of these kinks worked out by now. Hang on, now I just lost the poll. Oh, good. Whew. I'm trying to share too many things. This is like Hollywood school. Who doesn't see a poll?
I don't.
You're not voting.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. You can change your vote. 3, 2, 1. Interesting. We have a tie. Between Pommard and Swan. And the Swan is an elegant Pommard, rich and velvety. Both have great fruit on them. Both have strawberry, intense fruit, bright fruit. I think the Pommard has cola. A lot more spice on the, a lot more earthy violets, a briar patch on the Swan. Pommard, I'm reading sandalwood, pine cedar, leather, mushrooms, licorice. Now on the Pommard, Elaine, licorice, red licorice, black licorice, kind of anise. What type of licorice do you think that would be with the Pommard?
I hope it would be red.
Yep, me too. I'm hoping so as well. All right, so I'm not certain. This, I think, is what we all feared. It's an election runoff. I'm not certain how we're going to do this. Darn it. So this might be a coin flip for you. You, or maybe Doug. Doug could be the deciding vote, since I don't think he's on. I like that idea.
Doug, what should I do?
I voted
Pommard
when I first met him. I said Pommard. You should.
Whatever you decide. Pommard. The Pommard. Pommard wins. I like that. I like that a lot.
Whew. I really like the mushroom, forest floor, sandalwood profiles that are in the Pommard. There are some other things that I could do to make the wine, I think, a little more elegant. I've started harvesting a little earlier than I did with the 2018. And so I'm getting more of a red fruit in those instead of the really dark,
Well, I do want to show, I want to show everybody kind of where you're located. And it's interesting, we've talked, and Peter, this will be right up kind of some of the topics that you love. We talk a lot about water on the program. And interestingly enough, California has had, as we've seen in the past 21 or 30 days, I love the the meteorologist phraseology. You've had a bomb cyclone, you've had nuclear rain, you've had, I mean, it's everything's so catastrophic, but you have had a lot of rain and some of the reservoirs are getting to where they need to be from a water sustainability level. And I grabbed this report. These are the top 10 reservoirs in California. And I'm gonna show you a couple of these on Google Earth. Two of them specifically, Lake Shasta is currently at 60% of its capacity, but it's at 84% of its average for this time of year. So all of these numbers on the right being higher than where they are on the left is a good thing. Lake Oroville, you're gonna see something special about that. Currently it's at 73% of its capacity, but 116% of its average for this time this year. So granted, I don't wanna live near Trinity Lake because it's only a third of its capacity right now. They're still pretty low from where they need to be at capacity, but they're all pretty high from where they are at average this time of year. So that's exciting, but it's especially exciting getting rain this time of year. And snow, as you, many of the folks in Sonoma and Napa experienced last week with Howell Mountain getting over 10 inches, Spring Mountain getting 8 inches. I mean, that's crazy, but kind of exciting from a snowpack standpoint and actually from the water that is so desperately needed. So now Google Earth, this is our little playground. And we talk often about water a lot because Napa and Sonoma, whoa, that got there fast. I'll back up a tad. Napa and Sonoma are here, counties, and this is actually a lane right there. But before I go there in detail, let's take a look at Lake Oroville Reservoir. And this one is a little bit to the north. It actually is the reservoir for all of Sacramento. And this dam right here, for those of you that have traveled to Vegas and gone to the Hoover Dam, this is larger. This is the largest dam in the United States. And this is a very large body of water that you can still see is well below its banks, even at 73% of its capacity. Shasta Reservoir is one of the prettiest places I've ever been. And I've been fortunate enough to go to a lot of places, but I had to go here probably 20 some odd years ago because there was a medical challenge, speaking of physicians in the house, in the town of Redding, California, where apparently surgeons were operating unauthorized on patients that didn't know they were getting operated on. But this too feeds part of the Sacramento Basin and goes out to the Pacific Ocean. But more importantly, let's talk Russian River, because the Russian River headwater is about 80 miles north of where Elaine is. And this river snakes around and goes all the way down to the Russian River, past Lake Mendocino, into past Napa. And we're gonna find Elaine here in a second. There we go. And the Russian River comes right down here, loops around, right in front of Elaine's house. And when you drill down to see the property that Elaine found and purchased, it's incredible, Elaine and Mark. Absolutely incredible how beautiful this piece of property is. And it's got some topography here. You do not want to kick the ball down the driveway because it looks like it might not stop for about a half a mile, because this hill is fairly steep. And so Pinot Noir, I know, is a very, very fickle, finicky grape. And to give you folks in the audience an idea of what this looks like, there's a property over here that we talk a lot about the marine layer and the fog. So this is a little bit about what Elaine can see in the morning or in the evening when that fog rolls in at night, and then you wake up in the morning and you've got that fog layer just blanketing the valley. And that temperature inversion that Pinot Noir loves so much is certainly present, but I want to show you just the proximity to our new favorite airport. because you are so close to some great places when you land there. But this is Pinot Noir in Sonoma country. So you have a lane right here and, you know, a little place called Kistler, mile and a third away. Here's Williams-Selem, you know, 2.5 miles away. Martinelli, which we love, and their Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays, 3.5 miles away, 3.6. So this is really, really, really special wine country. And I can't imagine that you lack for people wanting to have dinner with you at Farmhouse.
Yeah. My Chardonnay is there.
Oh, okay. That means I'm going to be there. So that it's just beautiful. I mean, this whole area, do you just pinch yourself?
Every day, it's really beautiful. I couldn't be happier.
No, it looks amazing. And I just, this is such amazing soil and such amazing Pinot Noir. It's incredible. I'm still just speechless with regards to this topography. I mean, it is amazingly steep. I think it looks more like a ski hill.
Yeah, we are at 500 foot elevation. And we have 20 acres of land, but only 3 acres were plantable because of the steep terrain. And you can see how it just kind of, you know, runs down the curve of the hill.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, it's just a beautiful, beautiful piece of property. So congratulations on that. It's just spectacular. So one of the questions we always ask, and you don't have a tasting room, and Michael asked, so just above River Road?
Yes.
And that's Michael is our consummate WSET scholar in the house, because he's right. I was hoping someone was going to mention that. Joseph Swan Winery, which was in the picture, is the person that developed the Swan clone.
That's right. Just a couple miles away.
Yes. Very impressive. So there is no, you know, fountain and marble foyer greeting people when they come to your giant tasting room. So how do people actually taste with you today?
Well, I am going to be pouring at a few tastings coming up. I have a taste, so I will soon be able to offer tastings by appointment at the winery where I make my wine. It's in Santa Rosa, Inspiration Winery. There are approximately 10 different micro wineries that all make their wine there. Very, very helpful winemakers to me. I've learned so much. And on March 25th, there will probably be at least 6 of those micro wineries, including me, pouring. And it's open for those who want to come. I'll be pouring again at the Garage East Festival in Sonoma on April 25th. And in approximately 2 months, I will be able to offer private tastings at the winery. And then I also invite people to come up to our property to see the vineyard and get a vineyard.
Now, and this is a special invitation because the angel bonus offer, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you and 3 friends, maybe strangers, if you bring up 3 nice strangers, they don't have to technically be friends. It would help. But you and 3 people for a total of 4 can taste with Elaine at that property. And also, it's not really a tasting, it's a vineyard tour. She will give you a tour of the vineyards, talk a little bit about the clones, talk a little bit about the Chardonnay, and you may be able to taste something, but it's because you're going to be at Elaine's house. There is no tasting room there. So now you mentioned that you're going to have tastings soon. How is that going to be happening?
That will be call me and I will arrange for a day that works for you to come to the winery and taste.
Awesome. And Karen, if Karen is still on, I know she acquired a case today. And my guess is that she did that because she's got advanced planning to do and would like to spend a little bit of time on your balcony and patio tasting wines.
I would love to meet you here.
Karen is one of our faves. It's not a bad view from where I'm looking at your window and this view behind me. So it's pretty spectacular out there. And as we showed you, I mean, how far are you from the Santa Rosa Airport?
As the crow flies, what do you think? 3 miles, 4 miles?
No, six.
Six miles.
About 10 driving.
10 to drive.
So 10 miles to drive. So like 12, 14 minutes. Just teasing. That might be a little quick.
And you may see planes coming by in the background.
Oh, that's super cool. I'm going to pour a little more. So you've got an O2 type license coming up. You've got the ability to taste at your house. Tell me a little bit about the name of the vineyard. Calypti.
Calypti is named for one of my favorite birds that is all over the vineyard. It is the scientific name for Anna's hummingbird. Hmm.
And
Calyptiana is the whole name of the hummingbird. They love to nest in the live oaks and the madrones around our vineyard. And then we have a lot of hummingbird and pollinator friendly plantings here. We're also beekeepers. So the bees are further down the hill, but lots of bee activity too.
So sustainable fruit, small interventional farming, you've got the whole ecosystem of everyone. You should check out her website because she has all pictures of just everything that's contributing to the bounty that is in your glass this evening. And it all works. You know, it's not surprising, right? When you care for something tenderly and lovingly, take care of the land and put the natural predators in place, the ecosystem tends to work itself out. So congrats for doing that. Mark, I am jealous.
Come.
thank you so much for letting us steal a lane for an hour.
Thanks for having us. This has really been interesting.
Our pleasure. It's absolutely our pleasure. And this is what we think wine country and wine appreciation is all about. People getting together, sharing a glass of wine, breaking some bread, and hopefully not glasses. But this has really been wonderful. And we can't wait to see you folks in person.
We're looking forward to meeting you, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh my, our pleasure.
Meet so, everyone.
Yes, and thank you all for joining. Next week, SIP episode 124, we have Papione wines, also of Sonoma, and that go back to essentially what Elaine was just talking about, very minimalist, back to basics, farming back to basics, winemaking, fermentation, et cetera. So there's not a lot of intervention going on. Elaine, thank you for spending your evening with us. And Doug, you have to leave at some time.
Just to say hi. I couldn't go on camera, so I have to say hi. You should show
there
up.
There we go. And next week we will have in studio guests with Jeff and Jane that will be blowing through town. So we're excited about that. Angels can't do this without you. You're the reason we exist. We don't deserve your adoration and support, but we will take it. Be good to one another. Everyone have a great week and a better weekend. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye.